talking about the nature of Tisha B'Av, the question of what drives its severity. And we mentioned basically three approaches, that the Ramban maintained the approach that Tisha B'Av is actually the default model for a Tainis, that the other three Tanesim are watered down because of the fact that they're considered to be optional nowadays. The Gemara says, Ratzu Masane, Ratzu Ein Masane, while Tisha B'Av remains in its default position. And the Nesiv and others disagree and said that no, the other Tanesim are what they were always meant to be. Tisha B'Av is enhanced. Why is it enhanced? He understands because of Avelus being grafted onto it. Others, we mentioned in Chastina, understand that it's because there is this component of Moed, so to speak, a negative Yontif, that we're commemorating the inherent character of the day that has been traditionally negative. So the point that we started to bring up last time was an observation of the Sefer Avnei Sholem. The Avnei Sholem makes the following point, that the Gemara says in the Gilan Daf Hey that Rabbi wanted to be Oker Tisha B'Av, he wanted to get rid of Tisha B'Av, and Tosfos asks, how could that be? What about Kol HaMisabel Yerushalayim Zocha Bro'a B'necha Masa? He should want to mourn Yerushalayim in order to see its Simcha, in order to see its Nechama. So Tosfos has two answers. According to the first answer, he didn't want to get rid of it completely, he just wanted to keep it normal, he wanted to moderate it to compare with the other fast days. It shouldn't have the chumras that the other fast days have. And according to the second answer, it's that he wanted to move it from the 9th to the 10th. In sync with the view of Rebbe, the Rebbe said, if I had been there, I would have made it on the 10th. He wanted that to be the case here as well. So the problem is that that does not read at all with the rest of the Gemara, because the Gemara also raises the question, how could Rebbe want to do this, focusing on the fact that Rebbe was not Gadol B'Chachmu B'Minyan, that the earlier Bezdin that set this up. So the Gemara says, well, it's not that Rebbe wanted to get rid of Tisha B'Av as a whole, but there's one specific thing he wanted to, one point he wanted to make, that year was a year, as is often the case, when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos. So his position was, once we've already pushed it off till Sunday, let's forget about it. So that's very hard to reconcile, because according to Tosis, he wanted it always to be on the 10th. And according to the Gemara, when it actually was observed on the 10th, he said, you know what, forget about it. If we're not going to have it on the 9th, I think that's Tosis, yeah, if we have to choose between the Gemara and Tosis, we'll choose the Gemara. But there's clearly something that's not reading well there between the Gemara and Tosis. So what the Sefer Avnei Sholem suggested, I have that Sefer somewhere here, I remember I first found the Sefer many years ago, it was in the Meir Shuren Beis Medrash, so it must be somewhere upstairs.
Is that the Moran Avnei Sholem?
Yeah.
Moshe Lev
Shuchel? No, it's Eisenstein. Oh. So, but I remember first coming across the Sefer in the Meir Shuren Beis Medrash, so it must be somewhere here. It says as follows, that the debate between Rebbe and his colleagues was about this question, was about the question of what is it that drives the severity of Tisha B'Av. And according to Rebbe, he felt that it's really Avelus. So since it's really Avelus, it should really be the 10th, because the 10th is when most of the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. He was saying to his colleagues, you want to have it on the 9th, because you are apparently focusing on the character of the 9th of Av, the historical negativity that Tisha B'Av has. Alright, fine. If that's what you want, so then L'shitas Chem, it shouldn't have all the Chumras, because the Chumras come from the Avelus, which is more appropriate on the 10th. That's A, first answer in Tosis. And B, if you want to have it because of the character of the 9th, that's not portable. You can't move that from one day to the next. So either you're going to observe that on the right date, or maybe you won't, but you can't move it from Shabbos till Sunday because it happens to clash with Shabbos. So basically his position was, if you ask me, it should always be the 10th, because that's more appropriate for the Avelus. But if you're going to have it on the 9th, then you're making a statement that it's about commemorating the character of the 9th of Av, and therefore forget the Chumras and don't try to move it from one day to the next. And I thought it was an interesting explanation that he gives over there. So the truth is, that has a lot of halachic significance. The question of whether or not Tisha B'Av does move or not is a topic that's been debated by Poskim, because the question comes up, you know, about half the time Tisha B'Av is going to be on a Sunday, just in terms of the choices, because there are only 4 days of the week any Jewish date can be, and in the case of Tisha B'Av, two of them are Sunday, because either it falls out on Sunday, or it falls out on Shabbos and gets pushed off to Sunday, which happens more often. So the question is discussed by the Poskim, when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos and is moved, so what does that mean? Does that mean that Tisha B'Av really is moved? Can we do that? Or should we say that no, Tisha B'Av can't be moved? It reflects the character of the ninth of Av, and will always be in the ninth of Av. But when it's Shabbos, we can't fast on Shabbos, we can't overtly mourn on Shabbos, so we'll take all these practices and we'll make them up the next day. But it's not really Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av will be Shabbos. So what difference does it make? It makes a difference for a couple of things. First of all, Avelus is observed on Shabbos when it's Dvarim Shebitzina, when it's private matters. So the question of whether or not private matters, Dvarim Shebitzina, should be prohibited on Shabbos, should be observed for the sake of Avelus, so that was a debate among the Rishonim. The Torah quotes Machlokes among the Rishonim, and it seems to be this issue. Do we say that really it is Tisha B'Av, and therefore there should be some hanhaga, at least in the private? Or do we say, no, Tisha B'Av is completely moved, it doesn't apply in Shabbos at all, and therefore it's not different really than, or really substantively, than a different Shabbos? That's one issue. Another issue that comes up, could be very practical as well, is the question of Shavua Shechalbo, which is generally understood as the most chumer period in terms of the Nihugei Avelus. So when is Shavua Shechalbo when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos? There are two opposite ways to look at it. You could either say it's the longest Shavua Shechalbo of the entire week leading up to Shabbos, because Shabbos really is the week is Tisha B'Av, and the whole week before Shabbos is the week in which Tisha B'Av falls. Or you could say, no, it's moved to Sunday, so therefore there's essentially no Shavua Shechalbo, because there's no time in the week before Sunday. So it's two opposite views. Is it the whole week or is it none of the week? Which comes out of this question, when really is Tisha B'Av that year? Another issue that's discussed has to do with the prohibition of Talmud Torah. If you ever read the book, My Uncle and Siv, so it says there from the Beis HaLevi, but the Beis HaLevi has commented that everyone always thinks I'm a machmer about everything, but I'm stringent on everything. Because he has a number of kulas, a number of leniencies. One of his kulas, he says, there are some people who hold that you can't learn Torah not only on Tisha B'Av, but also on Erev Tisha B'Av. I'm making what you can learn Torah on Erev Tisha B'Av. Big lenient position. So that's an issue, the question of learning on Erev Tisha B'Av. So the discussion in Poskim, what happens when Tisha B'Av is Shabbos, then push to Sunday. So what's the status of Shabbos vis-a-vis Talmud Torah? And you essentially find three shittas. There are those who say it's really like Tisha B'Av, and there's a mitzvah Talmud Torah on Shabbos. There are those who say that it's like Erev Tisha B'Av, and that might affect the afternoon, Shabbos afternoon shir, let's say, or Pirkei Avos, whatever it is. And there are those who say, no, there's no prohibition of Talmud Torah on Shabbos ever, no matter how it connects to Tisha B'Av. So that's also drawing on this question of what is the status of Tisha B'Av that falls out on Shabbos. There's an issue that's a little bit less practical, a little more lumdish, that comes up. What if somebody is bar mitzvah on the 10th of Av in that year? So he becomes an adult on the 10th of Av, and everyone else is fasting, so is he obligated to fast? So you might say, well, why not? Because, you know, he's an adult, so he's having all mitzvahs like everyone else.
He wasn't on.
Oh, exactly. So since he wasn't on the 9th, and if the 10th is a makeup for the 9th, so then maybe he should be exempt. He doesn't have to make up what he wasn't obligated to. It's an interesting idea. All of these four issues all coming out of this question of what exactly is Tisha B'Av when it falls out on Shabbos. Does it actually move? Or should we argue that it can't be moved because it has something to do with the inherent character of the ninth of Av, and therefore that will always be on the ninth of Av no matter what, and perhaps just the practices can be moved? There are other questions that come up from the question of whether Avelus is the driving force behind the Inuyim or Yom Kippur is the driving force behind the Inuyim. Two areas I'm not going to get into in detail because they're very complicated. I'll just give you a Mar Mokum. One is the question of how the prohibition of Lechitza, of bathing, should apply, because there are nuances that are different between Avelus and Yom Kippur, and the question of what should the rule be for Tisha B'Av for such things, such as dipping your finger in cold water, for example. The Vizcha Rav has a lengthy essay about this, and the Mishnah Chinuch discusses it from a different perspective in Shin Yud Gimel, in the Mitzvah Yom Kippur. So if you look in those two places, you look at the Vizcha Rav and Hilchos Tainius, and look at the Mishnah Chinuch in Shin Yud Gimel, you see very different approaches to this question of how should we pinpoint certain aspects of the prohibition of bathing on Tisha B'Av. You see that it comes from different conceptions, or possibly combined conceptions, of whether it is Avelus that is dictating the Inuyim, or whether it's the Yom Kippur model that is dictating the Inuyim. Similarly, a question of how to look at the prohibition of anointing, of Sifa, on Tisha B'Av. There's also a discussion of Sefer Macheshes, which Hanukh Egesh has, where he suggests there's a debate between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi about whether the Sifa prohibition should be compared to Yom Kippur. He suggests that the view of the Talmud Bavli, or whether it should be viewed from the perspective of Avelus, which he understands to be the view of the Talmud Yerushalmi, which has, again, some technical ramifications. You could take a look there as well. There's an interesting question that was asked of the Rav Haigon. The Anshe Yerushalayim asked Rav Haigon that we know that when it comes to Avelus, so we call Avelus Shiva, but really in terms of time it adds up more, it's like 5.5, not really 7, because the first day can be very short after the funeral until dark. The last day is very short because of the principle of Nixion Kikulo. So the Avel generally gets up right after the morning starts, right after Shabbos. There was a view in the Rishon and the Ramban actually maintains the apply Nixion Kikulo to the night. It could have been 1 minute into the night, would have been the end of Shiva. We don't follow that, we assume it applies into the morning. So Rav Haigon was asked, why don't we have Mixion Kikulo by the Avelus of Tisha B'Av? Let's have it end right away in the morning. Or maybe if following the Ramban's view, let's have it be a 1 minute long experience, have it end in the beginning of the night. But at least do that, say in the morning, let's have it end in the morning, let's have a very short Tisha B'Av. So, especially in the summer, it'll be shorter than it would have been in the winter then. So Rav Haigon had three answers as to why we don't say that. Why do we not apply Mixus Ayom Kikulo to Tisha B'Av? So one approach he has, he says, you're right, there should be Mixus Ayom Kikulo, but you're already getting off easy, because really Tisha B'Av should be 2 days long. We should recognize the 10th also, when most of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So the fact that we only fast on the 9th is already a kula. So don't push it. Don't try to look for more, because already it's cleaner.
Is there any answer to this?
Seems like it, yeah. Or maybe that was the way of saying he had three answers. He was really focused on the question. The second approach is that it's not shyest to Tisha B'Av, because it's an Avelus concept, and Tisha B'Av is not about Avelus, it's something else that's driving its character. And the third answer that he has is that you're right, there should be Mixion Kikulo, but it would only apply to certain aspects of Tisha B'Av, and it wouldn't make sense to have it half over or half not over. That's not going to be a tenable way to practice, so therefore we have to just observe it the whole day.
What was the second reason?
Second reason was that it's not about Avelus, that it's an Avelus concept. The whole discussion in general, because the Gemara is not clear what Mixion Kikulo applies to. You know, there were discussions, why doesn't it apply to Shabbos and Yom Tov? So we tend to assume that it applies only to negative things, like Avelus and Tumah. So the second statement he has is that it's not about Avelus. So essentially, what do you see? You see three different views here that Rav Haigon is saying. Either that it theoretically does apply, or doesn't apply, or applies halfway. And the Soloveitchik suggested that this represents three different ways of understanding what drives Tisha B'Av. Is it Avelus, the first answer? Is it not Avelus, let's say Moed, the second answer? Or is it some hybrid of the two? That would be the third answer. So it's interesting, this is actually the point that got us into this whole discussion. We mentioned our entree into the subject of Tisha B'Av from our Sugya and Brachos was the question of Bein HaShemashos and Seis and the like. And this is the point that we started our discussion with a few days ago. That the Gemara raises the question, how should we view Bein HaShemashos of Tisha B'Av? Because logically speaking, we could have said, alright, Shabbos we understand now is 25 hours, we understand why. But Tisha B'Av could have been 24 hours and maybe even 23 hours. Like the Shabbos is 25 hours because we're mapping on every end. To start at the beginning of Seis and to end, to start at the Shkia and to end at Seis HaKochav on Saturday night. So that's because it's Torah law, it's Din Daraisa, so you have to be machmir on the whole story. But Tisha B'Av seems to be a Din Darabanan, so maybe we shouldn't have to be machmir, maybe we could go the opposite direction. Maybe we could start it at Seis and end it at Shkia, it'll be 23 hours long, less than 24 hours long. So in terms of the ending time at Shkia, that we discussed already, I guess, on Tuesday. We mentioned the idea that Gemara has that even the minor Tanaisim end at Seis rather than Shkia, even though you could perhaps define Seis a little differently than a Motzei Shabbos Seis, perhaps, but it's still essentially Seis HaKochav. But what about the beginning time? So when does the night time of Tisha B'Av begin? So the Gemara has in Maseches Pesachim a topic about this. The Gemara says, what's the story? Bein HaShemashos Shelo of Tisha B'Av, is it Aser or Mutter? And we assume that it is Aser. So Nachmir, to start at Shkia. The question is why? Why are we Nachmir? Why shouldn't we say we have the right to be Mekel if we didn't do Rabbanah? So there are at least two approaches to this. One approach is to say, no, it's not the Rabbanah. That we mentioned before, that something which is from the Nevi'im has the status of Divrei Kabbalah, has the status that it's considered to be transmitted from the prophets, and the Tereven and others have this approach towards that, that when the Gemara says, really in a very specific context, when the Gemara says, Divrei Kabbalah ki Divrei Torah, so I mean Divrei Kabbalah are compared to Divrei Torah, that means for all intents and purposes, and we're machmir on Sveikos. We treat it like a Din Minat Torah. That's one approach. But another approach that you find is that it's because of the concept of Tosefes. And we're machmir to start early because we want to have Tosefes Yetzis, so to speak. That's a fascinating idea. Is that really appropriate? Is there Tosefes by Tisha B'Av? So this seems to correlate to the two possible understandings that we have. That if it's about Avelis, so Avelis doesn't have a concept of Tosefes. In fact, it's the opposite. That's what we were just talking about. That mixed stone kikulo, we try to chop it off. We don't add on to it. But if it's a model of Yom Kippur that's operative, so then there actually is Tosefes. You may recall from our discussion a few months ago that not only is there Tosefes by Yom Kippur, but Yom Kippur is the model for Tosefes. That's the one day throughout the year when all Rishonim agree that there is an obligation of Tosefes is Yom Kippur. And most Rishonim think the Avi Yom Tovim are built onto that, and the Rambam limits it to Yom Kippur. But everyone agrees that it's by Yom Kippur. So if it's the model of Yom Kippur that motivates Tisha B'Av, so then yeah, it makes sense perhaps to have a Tosefes concept. So that was the point that got into this whole subject that seems to also flow from this question of what exactly the gather of Tisha B'Av is. I'll mention another interesting issue, and this will probably cap our discussions of Tisha B'Av for the most part. There is a discussion with Yaakov Atal Zolti in his Sefer Mishnas Yaveh, has a discussion about the following, that we know that on a normal Tainus, so we lay twice, we lay in the morning and the afternoon, the same thing. On Tisha B'Av, we don't lay by Yichal in the morning, we don't lay that in the afternoon. In the morning, we have a different Kriyas HaTorah, Kisol L'Banim. So Zolti wants to know, so that being the case, how do we categorize the laying of Tisha B'Av morning? Is it a Kriyas HaTorah of a Tainus, like every Tainus we read in the morning? Just happens to be Tisha B'Av is a special gets its own Kriyas HaTorah? Or is it a Kriyas HaTorah of Yontif? Every Yontif has a Kriyas HaTorah that's appropriate to its day. So maybe Tisha B'Av also has a Kriyas HaTorah for Yontif purposes. Who cares? What difference does it make? You call it one, you call it the other. So he assumes that this might parallel a tshuva in the tshuva of the Kiva Eger. Machashas also has a similar tshuva, that on Yom Kippur, we lay in the afternoon. And the Kiva Eger and later the Machashas both ask the question, how do we look at the afternoon laning on Yom Kippur? Do we say that it is a laning for, let's say, the Tainus, because every Tainus we lay in the afternoon? Or do we say, look, there's two times when we lay in the afternoon, a Tainus and Shabbos. Normally Yom Kippur we don't lay in the afternoon. Monday, Thursday we don't lay in the afternoon. The times we lay in the afternoon are either Tainus or Shabbos. So Yom Kippur, maybe we do it because it's a Tainus, or maybe we do it because it's a Shabbos Shabbos, and it's a special kind of Yom Kippur. It's a Yom Kippur that shares more in common with Shabbos than with other Yom Tovim. So what?
But it's strange, because the Yom Kippur laning in the afternoon is a continuation of the morning's laning.
Well, not,
not like Shabbos. Not like Shabbos, that would be the Pasha Shavua that's coming up.
Right.
But yet it's not like a Tanis, because the Tanis landing from it is always by itself.
So that's what prompts the question. That's where it parallels. Because it's the same slot, but we change the text. So do we change the text? Does that mean it's a whole different category? Or is it still for that purpose with a different text? That's the
sense. It's a totally different concept.
Correct.
Like a continuation.
Right. So that's what drives the question. If we lay by a child, he wouldn't ask the question. This is something else, so how do we look at that? And that's what the result is asking about the same thing in the morning of kind of a Tisha B'Av. So, but what's the difference in either case, in the Yom Kippur afternoon or Tisha B'Av morning? What difference does it make? Still call it whatever you want to call it. So what they assume would be a difference is, what if somebody's not fasting? If somebody's not fasting, so can he get an aliyah for this Kriya Setover? But if it's for the kindness, perhaps not. If it's for the for Yontif, okay, he thought he should be able to get. So he assumes that that's theoretically a relevant application of this question. He then goes on to discuss over there, resulting that not all the Afronim agreed with this premise, just parenthetically. The idea that somebody who's not fasting shouldn't get an aliyah if it's a kindness Kriyas HaTorah, which in the Kivagir and others assume. So he talks about from the Chuvas of some Sofer, the Chuvas of Bini and Tien, says that it's not such an obvious point, because there's two reasons to say that it shouldn't be true. One reason is that even, let's say, if somebody's sick and they're eating on the Tainus, so it's not that they are unaffected by the Tainus. They're still going to restrict what they eat. They're still going to eat less than they would if it wasn't a Tainus. So they have to eat something, but they're still fasting, so to speak. It's just that it manifests itself differently in terms of what they're allowed to do. That's A. B, presumably you are fasting at this minute. And you're not going to, even if you ate breakfast that morning, you ate lunch that day, you're not going to go up to the Kriyas HaTorah for your aliyah, sorry, with a sandwich in your hand, right? That's what most people are not going to do. They don't have to eat that often. It's an interesting question. I did see one shoe that talks about where somebody's wearing leather shoes on Yom Kippur. So it could theoretically go up for the aliyah, an active violation of one of the immune. But that's less likely to be the case. Let's say somebody ate that morning, but he's not eating right now. So at that point, the Rajalti has an interesting discussion. He suggests that there's a difference between Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av in that regard. When it comes to Yom Kippur, the Torah says, twice, the Torah says to fast and to the whole day is a fast, and to fast during the day. Essentially, it's two different concepts. There's a concept that there is a iser to eat at any moment of Yom Kippur, and there's a concept of a whole day creates a certain construct of a fast. So if one has to eat at any given moment, he's going to lose out on the idea of fasting the whole day, ne'er v'ader. He'll still have a prohibition to eat all the other minutes independently. So he suggests that since Tisha B'Av is a din d'rabbanan, so it doesn't have this notion that its whole day creates a certain unit. It just manifests itself as a din d'rabbanan to eat at any minute on Tisha B'Av. So therefore, perhaps there's a difference that somebody who ate breakfast on Yom Kippur is fasting differently, fundamental way, than other people who are fasting the entire Yom Kippur. Well, on Tisha B'Av, that's not true. On Tisha B'Av, if you ate earlier in the day, you're not eating right now, so you're abstaining from food right now is different, is the same rather than everyone else who is abstaining from eating right now. So you thought there were, at the end of the day, you thought there were two reasons to disagree with this whole premise, that not fasting should stop you from having an aliyah, but nonetheless, it's an interesting question. What is the Kriyas HaTorah? Is the Kriyas HaTorah reflective of a general pious mode, or is it reflective of a basic yontif component that Tisha B'Av represents? Even though it's negative, it's also a yontif and has that type of status. So that's basically what we'll discuss about Tisha B'Av. So just now an agenda question. So we're on next week.
One second. Why?